Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. And joining me today, like normal, is Juliana. Say hello, Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And today we are talking about a book from all the way back in 1960. The version of this was first published.
I can tell.
It's Algis Budrys. Don't know if I'm pronouncing that name right.
Algis Budrys?
Algis, yes, probably Algis Budrys, called Rogue Moon. Apparently this was first like a novella length or a shorter story, and then it was inflated out into a novel and then was published in 1960.
And you read it as the novel version?
Yeah, I read the novel version. Okay. Here. So this has got lots of recognition. So back in 1959, or for the, sorry, the 1961, it says here, 1961 Hugo Awards. This was nominated, mm-hmm. along with Death World, Venus Plus X, The High Crusade, Rogue Moon, and A Canticle for Leibowitz. A Canticle for Leibowitz was the winning story.
Okay,
there.
Okay.
So now check this out as well. SF Masterworks, the Golents. Is it Golents? Let me quickly have a look here. Hachette UK Orion Publishing book group published these as well. Oh, it supersedes the earlier Golents Classic SF. So this is also selected as one of the science fiction masterworks of, I was going to say 20th century, but some of these are from like 1895 and 1897. Some H.G. Wells stuff is classed as masterworks. I looked through this list. It takes a long time for any woman author to come in and actually be featured at all. Like, yep. Ursula K. Le Guin comes along like, hey, a woman who's writing science fiction. I was like, I'm sure there was women writing science fiction beforehand. Either way, yes, this book, I just want to mention that because, oh my goodness, is this a male book? It's a very male book.
It's a male book.
It's the most male book ever.
Okay.
Rogue Moon. Yeah, and it's right here. Rondo with Rama, Eon, and other books as well. That are old white guy stuff. So it turns out this Algis Budrys was like, I think it said he was Lithuanian American or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
And he wrote this book.
Right, I keep looking at the cover of the book because you propped up the iPad so I can.
Well, I can turn it off. I just plugged it in. So here it goes. It says, this is the Wikipedia blurb here. Rogue Moon is largely about the discovery and investigation of a large alien artifact found on the surface of the moon. The object eventually kills its explorers in various ways. More specifically, investigators die in their effort to penetrate an alien-built labyrinth where one wrong turn means instant death. But their deaths slowly reveal a funhouse-like course humans must take, the course they must take in moving through it. So, the reason why I read this is I was looking up some stuff about a book where there's also a story, where there's also an alien device on a planet where you've got to go to the, you know, go to it and you get inside. And as you go through, it gets more and more difficult and it punishes you and kills you if you do anything wrong. Does
right.
this remind you of anything?
Yes, but I can't pick out
literally
what?
The last episode I was talking about an Alisha Reynolds book called Diamond Dogs Turquoise Days.
Oh.
And Diamond Dogs, there's an alien structure and
right.
you go in there and it's a
yes.
tall dark tower and you've got to go in. Now there's lots of literary allusions to other things going in. There are old poems and other stories and stuff. The main character's name is from another poem or whatever that's in Alisha Reynolds' book.
Yeah.
But one of the influences on that book
Was this one.
Okay.
Algis
Budrys' Rogue Moon, to the point where as I was looking through some, you know, reviews of it, someone said, oh, and it references this, and Alistair Reynolds calls this book, Rogue Moon, one of his favourite novels.
Okay.
Which is interesting. And what Alistair Reynolds does is he takes his spin on these other people going to a dark tower kind of stories and poems and novels and puts his own spin on it.
Yeah.
In a way which is...
Makes
to be
it
honest,
better.
Yeah, much better than Algis Budrys' Rogue Moon. Again, I've seen this list, this thing listed in these, you know, when I've gone back through and looked at Hugo lists, you know,
at
those,
I mean,
early books.
If it's on the SF Masterworks.
Yeah, but you look at these kind of things and you're like, oh, Starship Troopers beat, you know, Sirens of Titan. And you're like, oh, that's pretty good year. And other things like this where you go, oh, right, Planet of the Damned or Dark, you see these other ones here. A Fall of Moondust was beaten by... So you look at what other novels that Hugo award-winning novel beat like the other novels. So, you know, I reviewed A Canticle for Leibowitz a few times, so I've obviously seen this there as well. I've looked through the masterwork, so I've seen this novel around, but it's never really stood out to me as something to read until I'm like, oh, Alistair Reynolds is referencing this book here. Let's give it a go.
Let's go to the source material.
Yeah, so let's go to the source material. And I must admit...
Yeah.
Oh, no, carry on.
Okay, just you. I have more questions that I'm going to ask.
Rogue Moon, like I say, Rogue Moon is largely about the discovery and investigation bullshit. It is not largely about that at all. It is largely about the people who are involved in that. But this book is like 200 pages long. Let's say it's like 180 pages
okay,
long.
Okay, I just wanted to ask how long it is.
The actual exploration of that, of the big
of the
dumb
item,
object.
Yeah.
Of the item is maybe 4 pages.
No.
Honestly, 4 pages.
What?
And most of it happens off screen by somebody who is like isn't really one of the viewpoint characters.
Okay.
And so that's all going on. And he comes back from the investigation as like, oh, phew, like, okay, I learned this. And now next time I'll learn that next thing. Okay.
Okay.
So, and then at the end, and again, I'm giving away a book which nobody should bother reading. Like, literally, this book is not worth reading unless you want to read it like I did, which is a historical curiosity from a book from 1960 that's referenced in a book that from 2001.
Yeah.
And now you're going back and working out where these references come from. With the idea being that because it's not worth reading, I'll just spoil it. What happens is, only at the very end does our main character go there when all of the puzzles have already been solved, except the last one. And
the guy who's
solving the problems and getting through it is sort of like, yeah, I reckon I've got it this time. It feels like I'm right at the exit. Like, I've got all the way through. I'm right at the exit. So he goes through and doesn't die. And the whole point is that, like, everyone who goes in there dies, which from some plot thing doesn't matter. Anyway, he goes through, and so like the last, you know, like 3 of the last 4 pages, or 3 of the last 4 pages, like towards the end, is him going through, not dying, everything solved, pops out the other end, and goes, right, great. And I'm like, so what was the big dumb object? Like, not explained. What was the puzzles about? Not explained. Who are the aliens who put it there? Not explained. Nothing about that is explained. So when it says it's largely about this discovery and investigation, it isn't about that.
Okay.
But anyway, the setup is here. So they've located something on the moon. Yeah. They need to get someone inside it. Hmm. But they've also worked out that there's some kind of scanning transmission technology. So they send up a human scanner receiver.
Okay.
So someone gets scanned down on Earth.
Yeah.
And they are destroyed in the scan, but then they're spat out at the other end of the thing. So it's very much, this is like I'm guessing like 1960 pre Star Trek transporter, but very much a Star Trek transporter, but you need a receiver on the other end.
Okay. Well, if they are this far advanced in that technology,
doesn't matter. It doesn't make any sense. Don't think about it. They haven't worked out how to do rockets to the moon yet, but they have worked out how to do matter transportation. But what they do, and this is the clever thing, is that they actually have 2 receivers, one next door back on Earth, with a tape delay or something, or whatever they say, and a receiver up on the moon.
Okay.
So what happens is that they scan a person once, and then there's 2 copies of them.
Right.
And because they're 2 perfect copies, their brains are interlinked through space.
So the new copy on Earth is
just
linked
sitting
to the copy on the moon.
And they just leave the person on Earth, like tied
like
down
a
in a room. Or no, not as a backup. They receive what the person on the moon is discovering and looking at.
Okay.
So they're experiencing it.
Yeah.
So when the person who goes into this alien structure on the moon inevitably dies, the person back on Earth experiences their death and then is like the only copy. So he comes out of his room and says, right, I know what to do the next time I go there. And then so he gets transmitted again twice. His person on the moon dies and the person left back on Earth is like, right, I know what to not do in this next step, you know, and this like, you know, this ninja warrior course
and
that he has to do.
And then can they do they scan him again and another copy
And they just
goes
keep
up?
Scanning and keep going up.
So that can't be healthy.
No, probably not. But then the alien structure is just littered with dead copies
of
dead people.
Of this one guy.
Now, again, just talking about Alistair Reynolds' book,
yeah,
the same thing is done in Alistair Reynolds' Diamond Dogs. I didn't mention it in the last episode. It's a mild spoiler, but it's revealed at one point that a lot of the dead bodies around the outside are the same person.
Are the copies.
In the past, somebody just kept on cloning himself and sending himself in time and time again.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out, but all of the dead bodies are scattered around the tower that get spat out by the tower.
Right.
It's the same person.
Okay.
Over and over again. So it's funny that Alistair Reynolds is referencing Rogue Moon in one of the like plot twist reveal kind of things that he does there as well.
Yeah.
So all of this sounds really good so far.
Okay.
We've got a big dumb object. Doesn't matter that it's not revealed. I don't mind big dumb objects, like the meaning of it not being revealed. And you've got this really cool science fictional thing.
Yeah.
And then you think, well, who would be able to experience death over and over on the moon
and not go crazy?
And not go crazy, because it turns out the book starts, everyone's going crazy. They haven't managed to send anyone in. Who the person back on Earth experiences the death of their doppelganger up on the moon and doesn't go crazy and catatonic and stuff like that. They say, oh, well, we'll put them in the loony bin. We need to find somebody who is
psychopath?
Yeah, pretty much. We need to find a psychopath who is such a psychopath that
they don't mind dying over.
They don't
over.
Mind, or they get a thrill out of it. Oh. So they go out and they find the perfect kind of like macho guy who in the Second World War was a sniper and also like a fighter pilot, and also then he does boxing and then he does long distance running and then he like races motorbikes, like, you know, that perfect like classical kind of like do it all, like I'm Steve McQueen and I, you know, like
look at my muscles,
yeah, like I'm the muscly guy but also I'm like the man, like I'm the, yeah, Hemingway kind of guy, I run with bulls and I, you know, race motorbikes and, you know, all that kind of like death defying stuff. And yeah, he's like done parachuting, he's like flown across the Atlantic
and he obviously has got no emotional attachment to himself and no emotions.
Weirdly enough, the whole book is then about the guy who's leading the Hawk, who is the guy who is a complete psychopath, sociopath. He's the guy leading the whole expedition.
Oh, okay.
Who is sending people to their deaths over,
yeah,
and over.
Yeah.
So he's a complete psycho. And then they meet up with this kind of manipulative head of personnel, Connington, who is like, they come to him and say, oh, right, we need a guy who can experience death over and over and not go crazy. He's like, I know, just the guy. And he goes and leads them to, let me just have a quick look at the name, Connington, Barker, Al Barker. So he goes and visits Al Barker, and Al Barker's got a girlfriend, Claire, who's someone, it doesn't matter what her second name is. And so what it is, I'd say 80% of the book is just conversations between these characters of Connington trying to get Al Barker and then Hawk doing this, and everything's described in so much detail. And you're like, well, why is this car journey being described in detail? It's like, oh, this other person drove their car up the same road, and that's been described in excruciating detail as well. And like the different ways that they both drive the car explains everything about their characters. And I'm like, great, that's all I needed. But then on top of that, they have multiple chapter worths of conversations of like hanging out with each other in this, you know, this villa up on the mountains, which is dangerous to drive up to, and then you got to walk down and you got to get hitchhikers and go into, and it's just so much just people talking at each other and talking past each other and talking by each other. And there's this I just looked here on these on friends reviews on Goodreads, so goodreads.com. I can see if you think, if you've also read the book. Here's something Simon Hedge says. You know how all the characters in Winnie the Pooh are apparently displaying various types of mental disorder? I didn't know that, but that's
like
a fun reading.
Eeyore is like the anxiety.
No, you don't need to explain it. I totally understand it. I know, just by saying that, I know what Tigger is. I know what Eeyore is. You know. Yeah. He says, well, this book is kind of doing the same thing, but where the denizens of the 100-acre wood are a likable bunch of with a few foibles, the characters in this story are broken, unpleasant, and often dangerous. A person with training in the field of psychology could have a fine time going through the book, diagnosing the conditions of the cold and almost psychopathic Dr. Edward Hawkes, the self-destructive machismo of Al Barker, the compulsively manipulatory Claire, the deluded narcissism of Connington. Each character is a mass of physical and mental tics, all detailed in the text against a background of a science fiction story that asks the readers to confront some big questions and still tells an exciting tale of a mystery on the moon. I would say it does all of that, Simon Hedge gave it 5 stars. I will not be giving this 5 stars. I will be giving this 2 stars.
Right.
Because really what it needs to be, it needs to be all of that, but just with a lot less talking, because it is just so much of these macho psychopath, you know, narcissistic men and women in some cases, just lecturing each other and talking each other. And it's like, well, now I know the meaning of life, and I know the meaning of manhood, and I know the meaning of purpose, and I know what it means to be obsessed, and I know what it means to be desired, and I know what, and it's just all of that. And you're like, okay, I get what you're doing. You're trying to make something literary by not just having everything about the space adventure. It's space adventure with a lot of people, you know, hanging out by a pool, you know, trying to seduce each other and beating each other up. And I'm like, nothing. And as I was reading it, I was like, none of this has got anything to do with the weird alien structure on the moon or what's going on there, and which is all just happening in the background.
And apparently not a by large exploration of it either. And I think here comes the point that you mentioned at the beginning. If this was published as like a short story or like a as it was typical in this time, as a part of a magazine or something, of course, then it would have been a bit tighter, maybe, and a bit more...
It definitely feels like it's been padded out, and it's been padded out by lots of conversations.
Yes.
Then there's other things where there's like this meet cute between the psychopath Hawk, you know, the guy who's running it, or psychotic. Again, all of these people are displaying character traits, which are so, so unreal to me. Mm. Or they're so extreme in their, you know, what does it say, psychological problems or mental
disorders.
It's not
subtle. Let's maybe say that.
It's so unsubtle that I couldn't connect with a single character in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've had
Which is healthy, I guess.
Well, here's the thing. I don't mind a book which is sort of like, oh, now, and this is a book about a mental disorder. Like I say, The Planetfall, like each one of those Planetfall books by, can't remember the name of the author now, but each one of those books is like a different,
Emma Newman.
Yeah, the first one is okay. What if it's about someone who is, you know, a hoarder, and compulsively lying about that? What if this person is, you know, literally the twist of the story is okay, the most dangerous person on the spaceship is you. Yeah. You know, all of these different kind of things. Each person has a different like mental disorder or neurodiversity or whatever you want to say. But that's what the story is about, and it actually, you know, that's impacting the story.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like just a lot of people hanging out, and like I want it to be a bit more, like I want to feel some connection with one of these characters. If I don't feel any connection with any of the characters, all I feel is alienated.
Yes.
Whereas the Planetfall books, the whole first half of each one of those books is establishing what you're meant to like about the character and slowly revealing what's wrong with them. And in this book, it's literally just someone saying,
in your
we
face.
Need to find someone who is a complete psychopath, who is attracted to death and doesn't mind that like one half of them is going to die and they're going to experience the death. We need someone like that. And all of the, you know, the weird like mental disorder people are going, yeah, we know just the kind of person. This is exactly the kind of person we want to work with. And the other person is like, this is the kind of person I want to fuck. And then the other person is, I want to fuck the kind of person that person wants to fuck. And I'm like, wait, what are you doing? Anyway.
Yeah.
It's got one of the worst love scenes I've ever read in a book. A man mansplains his life and story and just says, oh, I think I'm talking too much. And it's sort of like the author knows that this character is so unbearable and talks too much and goes, and then the love interest is like, no, please do keep telling me about yourself. And I was like, really? And she's saying, oh, what I like about you is that you treat women just like a normal other person. And the character's like, I'm not sure if I do. And I'm like, no, you don't. And it's really weird. Like this, like the view of the, and then it, like at the end of one of these scenes where he just explains himself to this other woman, and she doesn't get a word in edgeways. It's just a man explaining herself. It's a bit like this on this podcast, like
himself. You know,
just explaining himself over and over. And then he finishes a sentence and she just says, I love you. And I'm like, that's the worst line I've ever read in a book. It's
is
like,
this not how women talk?
No, again, it's not just how women don't talk. No, I've never had any interactions or read, like met anyone or spent. There is not a single thought which is expressed in this book which I can relate to in any way.
Yeah.
except as like as a almost a straw man of like a straw man position of like, let's write the most toxically masculine person like we could ever find, a manly man we could ever do,
right,
and see what's good about that. And I think the book is saying, oh yeah, this is good.
Really?
I don't know. It's not written well enough. So okay. It's a book which is so ambiguous.
You can't really read the intentions there.
Well, I don't know if there is our intentions. Like, okay. And that's the thing. That's what makes this book, I think, so well respected, is that it's actually quite ambiguous about what it's saying about obsession. And
so people can literally read into it whatever they
I
want.
I think so. Yeah. But unfortunately, that's it's just not clever. Very good in the end.
I get it.
This book is very low rated. This book here on Goodreads, on average, 3.49.
Yeah.
And you remember what I always say, the normal scale, if, you know, generally the scale is 3.5 to 4.5.
Yeah.
That's actually the scale that most books fall onto.
Yeah.
So if a book is 3.5 stars, it's kind of like a one-star book generally. And if it's 4.5 stars, it means it's generally a five-star book or enough people, you know, it averages out.
It needs to be that way because the bell curve is always there, going to be there.
This has dropped off the bottom of the normal, you know, distribution of the bell curve.
Yeah.
Normal distribution, but I didn't mean to say that. Like, not the normal place where, well, yeah, I guess that's me. Yeah. Whatever that is, I'm mixing the terms here. What I'm saying is, I always say 3.5.
You want to read the books that are on the right hand side of the bell curve going towards 3.5.
This is off the left side of the bell curve. I always say 3.5, and this is 3.49 one hundredth of a degree of a star rating.
Yeah.
This falls below what I would normally consider worth reading.
Yeah. It would be funny if now you put your rating in and then it would actually go even further down.
It will go down.
That would be really fun.
The thing is, like, this has got 3,000 ratings, mine won't go. But check it out. I actually opened up the page of... I opened up my reviewed on the SFBRP here.
Yeah.
On Goodreads.
Yeah.
So this is my list and I've clicked on average ratings here.
Yeah.
So the lowest average rating is Time Station Berlin, which I think I gave 0.5 stars to.
Okay.
You got The Big Time by Fritz Leiber, which again, it's one of these books from back in the, you know, that's a Hugo winner from a few years beforehand. When was that from? The Big Time, 1958. So around about the same time.
Yeah.
And that's definitely a story which is mostly about people just hanging out backstage at a show or whatever like that.
Yes.
So there's a few of these things here as well. Let's go. In the Quick by Kate Hope Day. Remember that book?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure you finished. And then Rogue Moon is coming in here. So of all the books I've ever reviewed on the SFBRP, this is by average rating of Goodreads reviewers and readers and users. This is about 10th place from the bottom.
The
bottom. out of 419 books. Out of 419 books, this is 409th.
Yes.
In terms of rating,
right.
It is very low rated. I'm going to give it like 1.5 stars because, again, there was a few little bits in this which I'm like, oh, that's interesting. But otherwise, it's a short read, but it's really not worth reading. So.
I think worth mentioning is that you normally listen to the audiobook versions.
There is no audiobook of this, I'm sure.
Maybe there is.
Because it is still being published, so I guess it's still in print.
So you read, you read it on the iPad, so I don't know. It was a ebook kind of format.
It wasn't an ebook format. It was a scan. It was a PDF scan of a book. But, you know, when books are this old, you can just generally, you just type in the book and PDF. Rogue Moon, Algis Bundry's PDF.
Yeah.
Click on it and
there it comes
download.
Up.
So there is actually an audiobook here as well, narrated by Graham Halstad, released in 2018. I think that's what the date says there.
Okay.
Yeah, 6 hours and 11 minutes. So, you know, proper novel. But a monstrous apparatus has been... And all of the blurbs that I see of this, it's all about this thing on the moon. But the book just never gets to it. Like, it does get to it, but like in the last chapter. And it just... And the whole science fiction-y kind of stuff. It's just not there. You know what I'm trying to say? It's not really worth doing it. Stop looking at the iPad. Something's obviously... the calendar's all sinking for some reason.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's all I've got to say about this book.
All right. What's the next book that you're going to tackle?
Maybe Chasm City. If by the time away for 10 days on my next cruise, my gig. So you don't need to have finished it by then. I have another book that I'm reading or listening to.
Yeah.
And let me go over here to Goodreads because I'll be able to list it more quickly here. I'm listening to an audiobook called Ink, Blood, Sister Scribe by Emma Tortures.
Okay.
And you know what? I don't even know why I started reading it, but I was looking through my to-read list and this was there.
From the cover of the book,
yeah.
I would have never thought you would pick this up.
Well, now I've started it and I don't know, again, I don't know how this arrived.
This looks so much like just a young adult.
It's not young adult, but it is urban fantasy, which is not the kind of thing that I'm normally into, but I started reading it now and I guess I'm just gonna give it a go. I'm a few hours into it and it's fine. Honestly, this was on my to read list and I don't know why it was on there. Maybe it was mentioned on a podcast, maybe I saw
it
pass by.
But it has a 4.04,
yeah, and it's got a good rating, 4.4 stars. 4.04 stars, which means it's probably around about, you know, on that bell curve, it's probably around about 3.5 stars, 3 to 3.5 stars.
A 3-star book for you.
It could be
maybe
around about that. All right. I said this would be a 15-minute podcast. It's been 25 minutes. Should we wrap it up there?
Let's wrap it up here.
Okay. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.